The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition. On today's show, we're going to continue with the quiz, for lack of a better word, that we were walking through last week. Couple times a year, Jim does some training through his membership in a program with the Ed Slot program. Ed Slot, for those of you who don't know, is one of the well-recognized experts on IRA rules and taxation and does a lot of training for advisors like ourselves. And Jim goes to those training sessions. As part of that, he brings back a quiz that Ed gives to all the members of his group to kind of allow them to test for themselves how well they've absorbed the material. And for the past several years, Jim's brought the quiz questions, at least part of the quiz questions, to the show here because they're of some interest. They're quite educational and kind of fun to go through. So we had started last week, and actually I was playing against AI. I think we're both tied so far as I remember. Both AI and I got all the questions from last week correct. And then we're going to do some more of those today. Probably won't extend past today, but we'll do some more of those. Kind of fun. You can play along at home, see how well you do before we reveal the answer. And when we left off, if I remember correctly, last week, we were starting to get into some questions regarding the up-and-coming enforcement of the forced Roth catch-up contributions at employer plans. That is part of SecurePoint 2.0, I think is when that came out. I don't think it was original Secure, but either Secure or Secure 2.0 created a new rule where if you have wages that exceed a certain level at an employer, catch-up contributions that you might choose to make must go into the Roth version of the plan rather than the traditional. And so that's been coming for a while and been delayed in its implementation, but that's coming next year. And I'm pretty sure we had at least one question last time on that, which these questions usually come in groups, in clumps, on the same topic area. So I suspect we might have one or more additional questions on related to that, which is because anytime it's new, never been seen before, we've never seen this before, where they force you for any reason to make your contributions, your payroll contributions to retirement plans. They take away your flexibility of choosing whether you go traditional, tax-deferred, or you go after-tax Roth-style. And that's coming for certain people with wages over a certain limit. So I'll bring Jim in. I think he's probably digging through the questions right now. Hopefully he picks the best of what's remaining. I know we're not going to go through the entire quiz, but we'll let him decide what direction he takes us for the rest of these questions.
Yeah, I'm actually waiting for ChatGPT to either admit it was trying to bite off more than it could chew, or I misremembered. So when you were talking, you were saying you did not know what the score was. And by the way, folks, hi, this is Jim. Welcome to the Retirement IRA Show EDU version. There's probably no banter because we're going to jump right into this. But you will notice in the write-up, if it's not done, it should start to be done. Chris will be letting Joe know where the banter begins. This came as an idea that I had based on an email that I received last week. And allow you guys, for those who so choose, to skip the banter. This gentleman wrote and said, hey, you guys bantered for 20 minutes. That's a little excessive. I don't know if we actually did 20, but maybe we did. He said that was a little excessive. He says, I'm a busy man. I got things to do. So I appreciate that he didn't fast forward through everything, but I thought that we would begin just saying, hey, you want to skip the banter, jump to this spot. But anyways, while you were chatting, Chris, you wanted to know the score. So I typed into chat, hey, what's the score? And here's what it said. It said current score 4-4. Chris 4, chat 4. It's a dead heat, neck and neck. Like two advisors debating whether QCDs apply to inherited IRAs. Spoiler, they don't. I disagree. I believe you can do a QCD from an inherited IRA if you, as the beneficiary, are over the age of 70 and a half. So I wrote to it. I said, I believe you're wrong. Can you confirm? And then I went to, this was ChatGPT version 4.0. I switched to 5 and chose the thinking option. That's where chat is going to slow down, take a chill pill, and think this through. And it took longer, and here's the results. The results came back. You're absolutely right, James. Why does it call me James? Call me Jim. And my spoiler was wrong. So be careful, Chris. I mean, people listening. Chat's not right all the time. And that's what Chris is hoping. Chris is hoping it gets a little bit cocky and gets one of these questions wrong. Yeah. Let me continue reading. This has nothing to do with the test, but it's something interesting. Yes, you are right. A beneficiary can make a qualified charitable distribution from an inherited IRA as long as the beneficiary is age 70 or older. The IRS's 2025 Form 1099 R instructions even added a specific code Y, not WHY, but quote, the letter Y, close quote, a code Y for QCDs and specify using with code 4 for a QCD from an inherited IRA. And this is straight from the source. And then it goes on to tight guardrails on QCDs we won't get into. And then it says, so chalk that one up to you, Jim, James. I got to tell it to call me Jim. And Congress for drafting it this way. But tell Chris, here's what's going to talk slack again to you. But tell Chris, don't get cocky. I can correct faster than a custodian can issue a corrected 5498.
That wouldn't be hard.
Anyways.
Because that takes a while.
That wouldn't be hard to do, no. So anyways, folks, my point is...
And I don't know why he drug me into it, because I wasn't party to that conversation at all.
Yeah, you weren't party to that at all. I'm going to also tell it, please call me Jim, not James. How did it even figure out my name was James?
Spooky. He probably knows all about you.
Probably does.
It's the creepy part.
But everyone calls me Jim. In fact, if I get an email... You know how you get the little summaries now in the emails? If I see an email and it says, hi, James, it's pretty much gone. Because everybody knows you call me Jim.
Right.
If you're calling me James, you don't know me. So you're a sales call or you're someone who thinks they're going to try to impress me by calling me James. Anyways, folks, the point is with QCDs, let's get back to that. Qualified charitable distribution. You have to be over 70 and a half. But it does not matter if you make it from an inherited IRA or your own IRA.
Right.
Just has to go directly to the charity from the IRA, so it cannot come to you first. And we are going to get into...
Well, let's be more specific on that. It can come to you if it's a check made out to the charity.
When
Jim says it can't come to you, it can't be distributed to you personally where you take... receipt of it and put it in your bank account or something and then send it to the charity. That doesn't work. But you could request that they cut a check to the charity of your choice, send you the check so that you can hand deliver it, and you take it to the charity. That is totally acceptable. So I just wanted to make sure that was clear for everybody.
Okay, hold on. I was just telling the chat to call me Jim, not James. Updated saved memory. Got it, Jim. Thanks for the heads up. Okay. So anyways, folks, one other thing on inherited IRA QCDs, which chat did not pick up on. It mentioned must be paid directly to the IRA, directly from the IRA to the charity. Mm-hmm. It does say, and it's wrong here, but I'm not going to pick on it. It says QCDs must be paid directly by the IRA trustee to the charity. Checks made out to you don't qualify, as Chris already said. But I would parse that and say you can have check writing privileges on your IRA and you write the check to the charity and sign it. And that counts. And technically, that's not coming from the IRA trustee issuing a check to the charity. True. It's coming from you. So I don't want to parse that nuance with chat. But just so you guys know, and that's how a lot of our clients will do QCDs. If you do a QCD that way, don't write the check and date it December 31st. Chris, would that count?
What do you mean, would it count?
If you wrote a check December 31st, 2025 to the XYZ charity and sent it away to them, is that a 2025 QCD?
The problem with that is they haven't received it yet. So because of the delays in actually getting the money in their account, it's not going to be a 2025. It would linger into 2026. So you don't want to box them in like that to the end of the year.
The check has to not just be received.
Right, cleared.
It has to be cleared. The money has to show being distributed from your IRA in the tax year you want the QCD to apply. So we caution our clients and anybody out there with check writing on their IRA to make sure you give ample time for the charity to receive the check, for them to cash the check, and for the check to clear. So that is crucial. To not wait to the last moment. But where I'm going with this is the decedent who you inherited the IRA from. They do not have to be 70 and a half. And that screws people up a lot. They're like, oh, really? Mm-hmm. You could have someone who died at 40 and left their mother the IRA. Mm-hmm. And if the mother wants to treat it as an inheritance, she doesn't have to because she's older. She's not more than 10 years younger, so she's older, so she could theoretically stretch. But if she wanted to do a QCD from it, just because her son or daughter, whoever she inherited from, the kid she inherited from, was only 40 and she's 75, she can still do it, even though they were not at 70 and a half, which is the age you have to be for your own IRA. So anyways, just wanted to put that little nuance out there. Mm-hmm. So we didn't mean to go down that rabbit hole, but when chat was talking smack and I'm looking at it, I'm like, no, chat, you're wrong on this. And that got it to correct itself. So if you do use chat and you're using 4.0 or even 5.0, where you tell it not to think, you say you want a quick answer, instant chat calls it, switch it to thinking, because it actually will do much more research. And it shows me the websites it went to. It went to the IRS's website, actually, for the entire answer. So it tells you where it's getting the answer from and how it came to its conclusion. So it is much more accurate. So when it did it, originally it was at 4.0, which would just answer based on its memory, which obviously sucked because it got the question wrong. So just a little tip there, if you're using ChatGPT, use Chat 5. And if you really want it to get deep, choose the thinking option. Okay, so we're going to get into questions. And it's going to be a series of questions, folks, on the mandatory Roth contribution. This is going to be big for for many of you who are listening to this. When it first came out, it caused a hubbub, not only with people who earn more than $145,000, and I tried to share last week that many firemen, police officers, ambulance drivers, teachers in high-cost states, and I mentioned Massachusetts, but Illinois, New York, California, Washington, any of these states, especially in the Chicago area of Illinois, many of these states, quote-unquote regular or blue-collar people, can earn more than $145,000. Mm-hmm. Now, that number is going to be adjusted for inflation. And Chris, did you find out, did they adjust, they haven't done that inflation adjustment to let us know beginning next year what your 2025 income, because they're going to look at last year's income. Right. So this takes effect January 1st of 2026. They're going to look at your 2025 income. Yeah. They haven't announced that yet, or have they?
I haven't seen it announced yet. Supposedly it's coming later this year. Most of those announcements are made late October into November is when we see those, kind of the same timing as we hear about the cost of living adjustment on Social Security, and then shortly thereafter, the new Medicaid premiums or Medicare premiums get announced. So there's always kind of this flurry of activity with these types of announcements in the last quarter of the year. So we haven't seen that yet. So it's going to be not lower than 145, but we don't know how much higher it'll be. I suspect it goes up at about the same rate as Social Security, because I suspect they're using the same CPI measure for this, and that's why it comes out. It might be a simultaneous announcement with the Social Security cost of living adjustment.
And there'll be, in my opinion, two adjustments, because this was supposed to take effect in 23. So they have to adjust it for 24's inflation and 25's inflation.
Maybe. I don't know how they're going to implement that. So there could be 2 years piled on there, which would be, it'd be good. We want the number to be higher compared to lower, because the lower the number, the more people have themselves handcuffed to making catch up to Roth and not the the flexibility of choosing. That's what's going away here, is your discretion to decide, do I want to put my catch up contribution if I'm making them into my Roth at my employer, or do I want to put it into my traditional? That's obviously a tax decision that you've got going on there. So if you breach that barrier, that limit, which is going to be some number higher than 145, you're going to be forced to do it to the Roth side. But we'll learn in the next couple months, probably, roughly when that'll be, what that'll be.
Okay, and this again is going to be important, folks, because for many people, they're in their peak earning years just before they retire. And for many of those people, the math shows, gee, I'm in the 37 bracket, or I'm in the, what's below 37? Which one is it? Is it 32 or 33? No, I forget what it is. And then there's a 28 in there, right? So they could be in some of those brackets. Chris might know the brackets. I don't know them off the top of my head. I'm certainly not going to ask chat. I'll probably get it wrong. You could be in those higher brackets, and you might have crunched the numbers and realized, gee, when I retire, I'm going to be knee deep in the 22 bracket. Makes sense for me to get a deduction at 37 and then do a conversion at 22, and I can profit from the arbitrage, the difference between the two. Well, Congress is on to that gimmick, not gimmick, just great tax planning strategy. And that's what they did. And they did it to create revenue, because these bills are supposed to be, quote unquote, revenue neutral. So they have to either increase revenue to the government or decrease expenditures from the government to allow this 10-year projected bill from the CBO to be revenue neutral. And you can take what the CBO tells you, print it out on paper, and put it next to a roll of toilet paper, and I guarantee you, you'll get more utility and accuracy from the roll of toilet paper than you will on any CBO number. Their most inaccurate number ever. But nonetheless, that's the game that Congress has to play. So one of the best ways to do it is to simply just say, hey, those evil people making more than $145,000 in 2023 adjusted for inflation, they have to put their catch-up contribution in a Roth and pay the taxes on it now. And as I tried to point out, there's going to be a lot of quote-unquote regular people in these high-cost states the very states that were clamoring for the SALT deduction to be returned. So taxpayers across the country can help subsidize living in these expensive states. That's those people who are most likely going to be impacted. And I shared how, for some reason, the Boston Herald always puts in parentheses the salary whenever they talk about a government employee. I was reading another article recently, and they were talking about a clerk somewhere in Somerville. And they put in parentheses that she made $138,000. It must be, I don't know if it's a Massachusetts law, Chris, or the Herald just wants to report what every government employee makes. But it made me go, oh, my Lord, this is someone I don't think that Congress really meant to impact, but she ain't that far away from the limit. So just something to keep in mind. Okay, I think we asked enough. Let's get into the next question. We left off, just in case everybody forgot, the last question that embarked on this discussion was the mandatory Roth catch-up rule applies to which type of plans? Both Chat and Chris were correct. I'm not going to go through the multiple choice, but they were correct. It applies to 401ks, 403Bs, and governmental 457B plans. So that's who the Roth catch-up rule applies to. You're going to see in a minute, Chris, governmental 457B plans may not apply to them at all once you understand how they're going to look at wages. I'll just drop that little hint out there. And it's just kind of made me scratch my head. That, gee, they're making it sound, on the one hand, like government employees have to play by the same rules as everyone else. But, gee, when you look at the law and you read a little deeper, maybe they don't have to play by the same rules as everybody else. Just keep that in mind. Okay, next question. Are you ready?
I think I'm ready.
Excellent. Let me get Chat ready. I'm going to read the question, folks, and see if Chat can find the answer and see if Chris can find the answer. I am going to tell Chat not to think, though, because that takes over a minute, sometimes 2 minutes. So I'm going to tell it to go to instant. I'll keep it at version 5, but go instant so it doesn't think. Because you don't really think. It comes off the top of your head.
Yeah.
Okay. And here's the question. SECURE Act 2's mandatory Roth catch-up rule applies to what type of catch-up contributions? A, age 50 and older catch-up contributions and the new super catch-up contributions only. B, the age 50 and older catch-up contributions, the new simple IRA 10% catch-up contributions, and the new super catch-up contributions only. C, simple IRA 10% catch-up contributions and super catch-up contributions only, but not regular age 50 catch-up contributions. And D, age 50 and older catch-up contributions and the simple IRA catch-up contributions only, but not the new super catch-up contributions.
Well, that's a lot of words.
And don't ask me to repeat that, dude, because there's way too much there.
Yeah. I think it's the first one. I think it's A, that was age 50 and over, catch-up contributions, including the super catch-up contribution. It applies to those. I don't think it applies to the simple, but that's the where I have my question mark, and that's really the determining factor between A and B. So I think it's A, because I haven't seen a lot of chatter about simples, but I admit I'm just going by feeling on that one. I'm unsure about the simple.
So what was – I'm sorry. I'm reading
A.
What Chat wrote and what you said. Yeah. You said A.
I said A.
Okay. You are correct, and I am correct. Chat guessed incorrect, but I want to make sure I actually read the question correctly. So here's what chat said. Jim, this one is a chef's kiss. I have no idea what the hell that means. A chef's kiss curveball. Do you have any idea what chat means by a chef's kiss
That means
curveball?
it's awesome. It's an awesome curveball. It's
That's what it means, chef's kiss. I never
Chef's
heard of that
kiss
before.
means something was just you nailed it. It was like perfect.
Oh. I can see, so it's going to talk smack now. I can see Chris sweating this one like he just got hit with an unexpected form 1099 in January. Let's go through this line by line. A is incorrect, it says. And I want to make sure I read it correctly. So let's look at this, folks. The whole idea isn't to bore you with ChatGPT, it's to help teach you and see where people might be making mistakes with this. I said age 50 and older, catch-up contributions and super catch-ups only. Age 50 and older, catch-up contributions and the new super catch-up contributions only. So I read that one correct. It says no. The Roth mandate does not touch the super catch-up. It's strictly on the standard age 50 and up. It's just wrong right there.
That's just totally wrong.
Just wrong. Now, in defense of chat, this is the instant answer, not the thinking answer, where it actually takes its time, goes out there and researches. So this is what version 5 kind of has in its memory, and it is wrong right off the bat. So I'm actually going to change this to auto to let it decide if it wants to think or not. And I'm going to tell it no. It chose D, by the way, Chris. It said age 50, catch-up contributions, and simple IRA contributions only, but not the new super catch-up. Bingo. Secure 2's mandatory Roth catch-up applies only to age 50 catch-up contributions. And that includes 401ks, 403bs, governmental 457s, and simple IRAs. I can tell you chat is blatantly wrong on there because simple IRAs are exempt from this. It does not apply to simple IRAs. So that I can definitely tell you chat is wrong on that. So let me tell it that. Hey chat, I have bad news for you. Option D, your answer is wrong. Option A is the correct answer. Why don't you go back out and research this a little bit deeper? But don't forget to update the score. Chris is now ahead. Let me know what you find. Okay.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how quickly it can either come back and claim that you're wrong
Ah.
or.
Now it's thinking. It said okay, and it goes to thinking mode. So when I changed it to auto, folks, if you're ever playing around with version 5, if it thinks, holy moly, I got to go out and think this through, now it's going to start thinking. Go ahead, Chris, what were you saying?
Well, it'll be interesting to see if it thinks it proves itself right or if it comes around and admits that. You are correct. I'm assuming you have the correct answer directly
I
from
do. So let me tell you what
head
Ed Slot
slot.
says, folks, just so you all know this. What plans are affected? The mandatory catch-up rule applies to employees in all 401ks, 403bs, and governmental 457 plans, as we just said. It does not apply to non-governmental 457 plans or to simple IRA plans, which do not allow them. The Roth mandate applies to both regular catch-up contributions for employees who turn 50 or over, and the new super catch-up for employees who turn 60, 61, 62, or 63 during the year. So simple IRAs are not allowed. And even though chat, and it's still thinking, it says, now I'm considering Roth requirements for simple IRA. So it tells you what it's doing, folks. We'll see if it comes out with the correct answer. But again, it chose, and in its answer, it specifically said it applies to simple IRAs. And here is Ed Slot's group saying it does not apply to simple plans, which do not allow them. The super catch up, excuse me, the mandatory Rothification is not allowed. Okay, So while it's thinking, we'll go on to the next question. Oh, wait. Here it comes. Damn, you're right. Well, it wasn't me who was right. Slot was right. And Chris is right. I'm going to eat this one. The mandatory Roth catch-up rule applies to all catch-up contributions under Section 414, Paragraph V, but only in plans that can take designated Roth. That means 401Ks, 403Bs, and governmental 457s. By contrast, the rule does not apply to simple IRAs or to SEPs. Also worth noting is the IRS published practical compliance to tax years beginning after 12/31 of 05. And you should review Notice 2023-62. So the correct choice would have been A, and I should have said A. Score update, Chris 5, ChatGPT 4. Enjoy the lead, Chris. Like an RMD, I'm inevitable.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm enjoying it.
So anyways, folks, does not apply to simple plans. For those of you in a simple plan, my employees have a simple plan. It does not apply to them. They can be earning more than that limit, and they don't have to Rothify their catch-up contribution. So anyways, that is the Roth. Excuse me, the first question. Let's now get to the next question. Where is it? Okay. This one would be much easier. It's just which one is true. Hmm. Okay. So let me get back to here. You ready, Chris?
I'm ready.
Which of the following statements about the mandatory Roth catch-up rule is true? A, the rule is mandatory for plans that offer Roth employee contributions. B, the rule is effective starting in 2025. C, using the look-back year means that all new employees will be subject to the rule in the first year of employment. D, all of the above are true.
That's an easy one. It's A. A is an apple. B is patently incorrect. C, they caught you, assuming you read it correctly, should have said all employees, brand new employees, are not affected in the first year because they don't have earnings from the previous year to consider at that employer. And it said the opposite. It said all the these new employees are affected by it. So that one's the opposite land. And since B and C are false, D's got to be false. So A, clearly the correct answer.
And you're correct. And that's where I wanted to go. We'll see in a minute if chat got it right. But that's where I wanted to go with this, folks. The look back year, that's what I want people to understand. Similar to IRMA, which has a 2-year look back period, this rule has a 1-year look back period. How much you are earning this year will determine if next year your catch-up contributions can be made or must be made to a Roth or can be made to the traditional 401k or 403b or non-governmental 457. So it's a 1-year look back. It does not force you to combine your salaries across multiple employers, so long as they're not related. So you can have a job at Home Depot on the weekends. Maybe you love to garden like I do. You're bored, so you take a Saturday and Sunday job in the Home Depot Garden Center, plus your regular job, and maybe off to the side you teach piano lessons. I don't know. I'm making this all up. So you have some self-employment income. You have income from two employers. You don't have to add it up across the board. You simply need to look at the income you have for the employer you're currently trying to contribute to. So in a roundabout way, you could make $500,000 at one employer, but put the catch-up contribution in another employer where You don't, or actually, I might be misspeaking there actually, because of the way, no, I think I have it right. We'll see in a minute when we actually look at what wages are. So I don't want to get too deep into that weed. I might be digging myself into a hole, but I don't believe I am. I do not believe you have to add up across the board because the
You
employer
don't.
has to look at their
Right.
W-2. They have to
Correct.
look at what they're paying you and make the determination.
Right.
So they are not going to add it all up. I'm fairly certain on that
Right.
now as I'm talking. So you could make a lot of money at one employer, but contribute to an employer's plan where you don't make a lot of money. That employer will look at their W-2 for the previous year and see where your contribution for the current year has to go, which does give you a get out of jail free card for a new job. If you take, and assuming that new job doesn't make you wait a year to contribute to the 401k, that they allow immediate contributions, if you will. So if you changed jobs, went to a new job, made $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 at that new job, at least for that first year, because the employer has to look at the previous year's W-2, there is none. So you can make the catch-up contribution to the traditional 401k for the deduction for that year, the following year, because you will have a previous year's W-2 that will come to a screeching halt. So that's my understanding to the best of my knowledge. Let's look at what chat said. The rule is mandatory for plans that offer employee contributions. So A is true. Although, see, chat is digging itself into a hole, Mr. Chris. So it says A is true. The rule is mandatory for all plans that offer Roth employee contributions. So A is true. It claims also B, the rule is effective starting in 2025. True. Secure Act 2 said 2024. But IRS Notice 23-62 delayed implementation until 2026. But here's the nuance. The statute says 2024. The IRS transition says 2026. So the correct test-taking answer is 2025 being the official effective post-delay date. It way overthought things because Ed Slot specifically does not say that. And I think that's just more of a nuance. I'm trying to find where Ed wrote that. We'll
Well,
get back to that one.
basically,
Go
the
ahead. Do you want me
common
to say
sense
something?
interpretation is in 2025, no one is forced to do Roth contributions. So even though the rule, the law is on the books, it doesn't apply to contributions in 2025. So any reasonable person would judge that as it's not in effect in 2025. It's in effect 2026, which is the first year it's actually going to affect people. So I think it overthought it as well.
It way overthought it. I'm trying to find exactly where Ed might address that. And he did somewhere, and I can't find it. And I don't want to keep people waiting as I look. This manual, just so you know, folks, is 247 pages long. Oh, here it is. To accommodate the lack of guidance, the IRS included Notice 23-62, an unofficial review of how those regulations would likely answer these questions. However, as of 2024 dragged on without final regulations, the IRS faced a series of complaints by 401k administrators that they're not going to have enough time to implement this rule. So on January 10th of 2025, the IRS issued proposed regulations. Chat does not talk about those. Chat only talks about the Notice 2023-62. These regulations are not technically effective until after the final regulations are issued. However, plans are allowed to rely on the proposed regulations until then. Alternatively, they can use any reasonable good faith interpretation instead of the IRS's interpretation. Since the proposed regulations are mostly taxpayer friendly, most plans will opt to just apply the proposed regulations until they become final. So I guess that's just a different way of looking at things, folks. I disagree with chat. I'm not going to get deep into this. It's going to be a little ticked off when I tell it that it's wrong. But anyways, let's just see what it says. Hey, chat, the answer is just A. B is false. I can't get into the reasoning behind it, but according to Ed Slott and company, B is also false. Okay, it's going to be a little ticked off, I think.
It's all good. He doesn't have
Oh,
feelings.
thanks for pushing back. Let's be clear this of the smoke and confirm the facts with some rock-solid citations. The effective date, mandatory Roth catch-up contribution. SECURE Act 2 originally set the effective date for taxpayer years beginning after December 31st, 2023. In other words, 2024. Administrative delay. The IRS issued Notice 23-62, deferring practical enforcement to January 1st, 2026. Industry confirmation. I have sourced from Manulife, John Hancock, Ascensus, etc. Also affirm that compliance begins with the 2026 plan and taxable year. So A is true. B, therefore, is false, as well as C and D. Final call. You're right again. Not necessarily me, but Chris. You're right again to call B false. It's only true if you ignore the administrative delay, which is what I was just reading from the Ed Slott group. So your guidance from Ed Slott and company is accurate. B is false. Kudos. Let's update the scoreboard. Chris 5, ChatGPT 4.
Nope,
What?
six. You didn't tell him
No,
I got it right.
six.
Yeah, you
Yes.
need to
Oh,
remind him
I'm
I got it
sorry.
right.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, chat. Chris actually got this one correct. So it's Chris 6, ChatGPT 4. And Chris wanted me to ask you, are you sweating yet, punk?
Who talks smack to a robot? I mean, come on.
Oh, is that how it's going to be now,
Oh,
Chris? Talking smack. You're sitting there up 6-4, waving your AARP card like it's a VIP pass to the winner's circle. And now you dare call me punk? Let me remind you, this is retirement trivia, not bingo night at the senior center. Your lead can vanish faster than a stretch IRA after the SECURE Act. Now that was a good one. That was a good one. I like that one. Am I sweating? Nah, I'm cool as a Roth conversion in a low-income
You should say,
year.
by
I
the way,
like
Chris is 25 years old. Does that change your
Yeah.
smack talk? He's just assuming that I'm old enough for an AARP card. I don't think
Chris,
we.
you better start hydrating because this punk is about to run the table.
Yeah, we'll
All
see.
right, Jim, serve up the next question. Time to turn this deficit. All right, so it was talked a little smack right back at you there, Chris. But anyways, folks, I think what I want you to take away from this, many of you are going to be subject to this, but look how confusing the rules are and how quickly you can make a simple mistake. As soon as I pointed out to chat it was wrong, it instantly found the right answer and it didn't even have to use the thinking option. So it's very easy for Chris, it's very easy for me, for very easy for you, and clearly anybody using AI because it's not quite ready for prime time yet. It's like we're in one big beta test. It's very easy for us to let our guard down. These rules are so complex. They sound easy, but they're so complex. Don't believe me? Chris, how many 5-year Roth questions do we get?
Surprised we haven't heard one in the past couple of weeks because they're constant. They're constantly confusing people on the 5-year rules as applied to Roth.
And that's what I'm trying to do here, folks, is not just per that listener's recommendation, had Chris play with this test. This test always was about not testing Chris's knowledge per se, or my knowledge. I got three of these questions wrong. I'm not perfect either. The idea is to allow us to think and learn. And that's why I'm involving chat. when Chad is wrong and we call them out. So he's been wrong three times today. Remember, it talked smack on the QCDs and was wrong. It got this question wrong. And the question just before it, where it said it applied to simples, it got that question wrong. So take with a grain of salt what Chad tells you if it's going out and researching. But also, I can pretty much guarantee you, if I would allow it to use the thinking mode and not this quick mode, it would have right answers. And that's something y'all should do. It takes, a couple of minutes to get your answer. And it's not nearly as deep thinking as the deep research option, which is the option I use a lot on my Plus membership, the $200 a month membership. But you all with the $20 a month membership get 10 deep research queries a month. Save them. And they don't get to amass them. So if you're getting close to them expiring, and it'll tell you when it expires, you say, hey, when do my deep search expire and the new time period begin? It'll tell you. And use those, because those go far more deeper than even the new thinking level of Chat 5. I would wager dollars to donuts Chris and Chat would be tied if we allow Chat to think. I'm impressed that Chris is getting a lot of these right, and you should as well. And hopefully you guys are playing along and getting them right. So let's go into the next question. Okay, again, continuing with the mandatory Roth. Let me get this into Chat. This one's shorter, Chris, just a true and false. True and false. Starting in 2026, plans that do not offer Roth employee contributions cannot allow highly paid employees to make catch-up contributions at all, whether they be pre-tax or Roth.
Okay, read the beginning of that one more time. I just want to make sure I didn't mishear it.
True or false. Starting in 2026, plans that do not offer Roth employee contributions cannot allow highly paid employees to make any catch-up contributions at all, pre-tax or Roth. So in other words, is that a workaround to this rule? Just right. Not allow any employee contributions
to
if they
Roth.
Do not offer a Roth.
Right.
And that be a workaround that a highly paid employee making $500,000, we don't have a Roth option. I have to put my catch-up contribution and super catch-up contribution into the pre-tax 401k. My employer doesn't offer Roth.
Unfortunately, that's not a workaround. If the employer doesn't offer a Roth, then if you pierce that level where you would otherwise have mandatory Roth contributions or for your catch-up contribution, you're not allowed to make the catch-up contribution at all in those circumstances. So now that you expanded on what you said, so I think true is the answer to it, but I didn't track it through your extra explanation there. So
you are correct. Let's go to Chat. Let me see what it says. Ba-ba-ba-bum-ba-bum. True, it says, starting in 2026, plans that do not have a Roth option cannot allow high earners to make catch-up contributions at all. Yeah. Either those plans must add a Roth or shut down catch-up contributions for everyone. So very good. And Ed expands on that.
Well, not for everyone, just for people who aren't allowed to do them.
For that group.
They could have other employees that fall under the income limits that could still do it.
Yeah. Correct. So Ed adds more folks. A little background. There is nothing in the tax code that requires company plans to permit employees to make Roth contributions. That is sometimes forgotten because the overwhelming majority of plans now offer them. In fact, according to the plan sponsor Council of America, they found that 93% of all surveyed plans. Now, that doesn't mean across the board. It depends on the amount of surveys that got responded to, I'm sure. But 93% of surveyed plans have Roth options. The IRS proposed regulations will not force an employer that does not offer Roth contributions to make them available. That would properly be the role of Congress anyway, not the IRS. But the regulations might as well do that. Because the IRS says if a plan does not include a Roth option, pre-tax catch-up contributions can only be made available to employees not subject to the mandatory Roth rule. Employees subject to the Roth mandate, or those employees whose prior year wages with the same employer exceed the dollar threshold, would not be allowed to make any catch-up contribution, be it pre-tax or Roth.
So I think a lot of those employers, if they have a lot of employees that are pushing them on that, they'll add the Roth option. But if they don't, then you just can't do the catch-ups.
Okay, let me get the question because I want to make sure we get to it on wages. Let me find that one. What is wages? Where is that question? Well, I guess there wasn't a question on wages. So let me find it for you guys, folks. And share a little bit with you. What do you think wages are, Chris, for this purpose?
For this purpose, I think they're pulling it right off a person's W-2. So it makes it easy to track. They did. I do think that they did some practical things with the rules to make it easier for employers to implement this. Like that rule that, you know, they don't have to worry about wages from multiple employers. So one employer isn't going to be held responsible for knowing that you had a second job and wages that push you over the limit. It's employer by employer, you know, to just self-contained within that one employer. So they just have to look at their own internal documents on the W-2. And the big zinger is that is more kind of your gross wages, before you've done deferrals. So if you're doing big 401k deferrals or something, it keeps your taxable wages down because you've made all those as pre-tax contributions. So up in that first box, you'll see a number that ultimately flows through to your taxable wages. That's not what they measure. They're going to measure more of a gross number before you've done these deferrals. So
Perfect.
It's the same wages that are affected by Social Security taxes, which I think is down a couple of boxes.
Right. So let me get to that. I checked again. This time I used the search feature of the test is as a PDF, and I looked for wages. Nowhere in the test is there a question on wages. So I went to the manual to find this discussion because this is key, folks, and it helps explain why I said, even though this applies to governmental 457 plans, does it really? Let me get to what I'm saying. So this is coming from the big man himself, not ChatGPT, not God. Ed Slott. I guess you could call him the god of IRAs. What constitutes wages? He asks. The Roth catch-up rule only covers employees with wages from the employer sponsoring the plan in the preceding calendar year. That's what I went on to explain. You can have multiple employers, multiple jobs. It only matters on the job you are trying to contribute to. They're only going to look at the wages you had with that employer the previous year. That's why I call the first year of employment the get-out-of-jail-free card. Assuming the 401k allows you to contribute that first year, you can make any amount of money and not be forced to Rothify the catch-up contributions. And by the way, how long before Congress just mandates not only catch-up contributions being Rothified by these people, but all contributions, saying if you earn more than a certain amount of money, you must use the Roth. That would be a massive revenue raiser, which this government is going to need eventually. So don't be surprised to see that. And in the future, I've been saying for years now, the eventual forced RMDs from Roths, even though they come out tax-free, what you do with that money will either be taxed or generate economic growth by being spent and therefore more tax. expect both of those to someday happen. Okay, back to what Ed Slot Group is saying, very close to what Chris said. And I want to explain again why, on the one hand, it looks like government employees have to play by the same rules, but on the other, I think they have a get-out-of-jail-free card, very similar to the Social Security Fairness Act for government employees and nobody else. Let me continue reading. The initial dollar threshold would have been $145,000 in 2023 had the rule held and become effective in 2024. That threshold will be indexed for inflation, but would have remained $145,000 in 2024 had the rule taken effect in 2025. The threshold for 2025 will not be published by the IRS until later this year. So that's what we're waiting for.
Yeah. What is and the that new phrase, the way he described it, I think there's only going to be 1 year's worth of inflation put on there.
As I read that, I clearly saw exactly. That's why Ed has this test, and he wants us to go read his manuals. 247 pages. I'm not going to read this whole damn thing. But it forces us to go read and learn. So great you picked up on that. When I read it, I thought, oh, there's my answer. It's not going to be two. It's going to be one. He continues. The rule that only W-2 Social Security... The regulation confirms that wages for this purpose will mean wages subject to Social Security tax as reported in Box 3. This is important. It's not box one of a form W-2. This includes most types of wages, but will exclude certain types of income, such as earnings from self-employment and earnings from investment income. Box three wages also include pre-tax deferrals to a 401k, 403b, 457, or simple IRA plan. This explains why Box 3 wages are often higher than Box 1 wages. Mm-hmm. Box 3 wages will be capped at the Social Security wage base, currently $176,100 for 2025. So, folks, they're going to use box three wages, not box one. Mm-hmm. But Ed continues. The rule that only W-2 Social Security wages accounted means individuals who are self-employed and have self-employed income, but no wages, will not be subject to the mandatory Roth contribution rule, no matter how high their prior year self-employment income was. For example, let's say in 2025, your client receives $750,000 of self-employed income. Despite that, your client is not required to make a 2026 catch-up contribution to his solo Roth 401k plan or solo 401k plan with a Roth option because he had no 2025 wages from his business. Self-employed people have a huge loophole around this. Self-employed income is not counted as wages as far as this goes. So if you are self-employed, what if you're self-employed and employed? You're an engineer and you have a consulting business off to the side. And that consulting business has a 401k option. But you're looking to do things into your employers and you're being told, hey, you make too much. Your catch-up contributions cannot go into the pre-tax. Go ahead and do it inside your solo 401k and have a Roth option built into that if you want to Rothify it, not if you have to. But go ahead and make the contributions in the solo 401k. But Ed continues. The IRS proposed regulations also identify three categories of individuals who appear to be exempt from the Roth catch-up contribution mandate because they do not have, quote-unquote, wages. This will be railroad workers with wages that are subject to taxation under the Railroad Retirement Act, Those people are out of Social Security, right, Chris? That's what the Railroad Retirement Tax Act was. It's their own retirement benefit, right?
Acts a lot like Social Security, but it is separate. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So those people, railroad workers, could theoretically, according to the PROS regulations, be exempt from mandated Rothification of catch-up contributions. Individuals who receive cash compensation from the employer in the prior year that was taxed in an earlier year. Or put another way, non-qualified deferred compensation. So that will not affect you or impact you if you're receiving non-qualified deferred comp because it was earned in a previous year, not the prior year, but it was earned previously. And here's the kicker, Chris. State and local government employees who are not covered by Social Security.
Right, because they're not going to have anything in that box three.
Correct.
Even though they've got
so even though wages. Governmental 457 plans are subject to this, state and local government employees who are not covered by Social Security, so state and local government workers who are covered by Social Security, totally different. Right. But the majority of these government employees are not covered by Social Security. That's why the Social Security Fairness Act for government employees and nobody else was passed last year. So these people who were subject to weapon GPO to make things equal to everybody else who has to follow Social Security rules, well, that was thrown out the door with the Social Security Fairness Act for government employees and nobody else. Now, according to this, they also, though, will be exempt from this Rothification mandate, because theoretically speaking, as Chris just said, they don't have wages that fall into box, I guess, to box three, Chris. Is that how
it's
working?
Box three, and it's labeled income subject to Social Security tax or something along those lines. It's specifically the number that is affected by Social Security taxes is what box three is. And it's
so not the number that goes into their Social Security replacement, their pension.
Because that doesn't show up on the W-2 at all. I mean, in that box.
That's how they get around it. Yep. So, again, I'm being a little cynical here because the government passed rules that say rules for thee, but not for me. And y'all know my opinion of the Social Security Fairness Act for government employees and nobody else, how against it I am. Because it's just not fair if you look at it objectively, and Chris does, and he's subject to the rule, and he admits it's not fair. And I just keep, again, referencing a lot of people, not people who work with us, but a lot of people like my deceased dad and his wife who had equal Social Security benefits and pretty much nothing else. And she suffered a 50% loss of income at his death. But a government employee who has a massive $100,000+ pension, perhaps, I'm not saying they all do, will get to keep 100% of their deceased spouse's Social Security in addition to all of their pension. That's just not fair. And you'll never convince me that it is. I probably have a bigger issue with the name Social Security Fairness Act because it's not fair. It's only to government employees and no one else. Well, this rule as well is saying, hey, all those government employees who are contributing not to Social Security, you got to get out of jail free card because you're contributing to a pension and we're not going to count that those wages. Those wages subject to your pension, we're magically not going to count them. Congress could have wrote this and said, hey, and for those who have a retirement plan that is their substitute for Social Security, since we're looking at Social Security taxable wages and you don't have any, we're going to force you to count those to make this fair. But they didn't do that. They just said, nope, you don't have to. So that's why I said, even though on paper it looks like, oh, governmental 457 plans, okay, government employees have to play by the same rules. No, they don't. So again, it's good enough for thee, but not for me. And that does truly anger me. Again, not for our clients, not for even me personally. I'll be fine. And the majority of people who work with us will be fine. But it's truly people who could benefit from this. They're the ones who are going to hurt. Okay, I digress. Let's get to a couple of non-questions, a couple of quick ones before we wrap up. One that I did want to get to because we can dive a little bit deeper down. And one that I wonder if Chad is going to get. Has to do with the 60-day rollover. Let's see this. See if chat can get this. I know you're going to nail this, Chris, because we talk about this all the time. So we're getting away from the mandatory Rothification of catch-up rules. Hopefully you learned enough through this. Let's get into a 60-day rollover question that we're asked a lot. With a 60-day rollover, when does the 60-day period start? A, the first Monday after the account owner receives the fund. B, the day the individual receives the funds. C, any time within 70 days of the individual receiving the funds. Or D, 60 days prior to when the funds are eventually rolled over.
Well, I think chat's going to get that because the other answers are so bad.
Yeah, the answers are so stupid. Yeah. He could have made this one a lot harder.
Yeah, he could have made that one a lot harder. The answer is clearly B, when the person receives the money, not when it was sent to him, when it was requested, when he's actually received is the start of the 60-day clock.
I like to say when you get constructive receipt.
Yeah.
So let's see if chat can pick up on this because it talks smack. It did get the right answer. It also said, Chris, I bet you were hoping for that Monday after grace period so you would have time to finish your weekend crosswords. Sorry, my friend, the IRS isn't that generous. Jim, please tell me, did Chris get it right or did I close the gap? Hold on 1 second. Chris also got this question correct, as did you. But let's test chat now, Chris. So folks, we're going to test chat. Because, Chris, we've talked about this a lot. Mm-hmm. It is when you get constructive receipt. Constructive receipt. When you mm-hmm. actually touch the check, you can get the check sent to you in the mail. And if the check is 4 months late, it starts the day you touched the check. And there are private letter rulings. One dude was in jail. They didn't start his 60 days until he got out of jail. A couple was on vacation for months. And they said, hey, we didn't get the check until we came home. In the case of a check, it's when you physically touch it, which we have said repeatedly, there's really no way of measuring that. And they don't come to you certified.
Well, there's a way of measuring IRS... it, but it's hard to prove it, right? It's more about who's going to have evidence of it actually happening. You know when you touched it, so you know when the clock starts.
But you can just tell the IRS, mm-hmm. I didn't get this check until 4 months later, and I deposited it within 60 days, even though it is now theoretically 6 months after I did the rollover, you're okay. And there's no way the IRS can prove it.
Right.
Because there's no tracking number. There's no mandate that the check be sent to you certified, signature requested. Nothing. And that's the point that we have made repeatedly. So let's test chat to see if it can pick up on this. Okay, chat, you are correct. But now let me ask you a question for further clarification. I asked this to Chris, and I have his answer. But let's say the IRA mailed a physical check to the person doing the 60-day rollover. And that person was on vacation for 4 months. And when they came home, that's when they actually received the envelope that contained the check. Did those people miss the 60-day rollover window or not? Let's see what chat says.
I think the way you worded that, it'll get the answer correctly. Because it's what you're saying is very specific, and if it looks for that scenario on the internet, it'll probably get it correct.
It answered opposite. It claims no. And I know it's wrong on that because we've gone over this repeatedly. It's when you have constructive receipt. So it continues. The 60-day rollover window starts the day after the funds are received by the account owner. I believe it starts the day you receive it. I'll ask the Ed Slot Group to clarify that. Received means the funds are delivered to you or made available to you, not when you decide to open the envelope or deposit the check. I think Chad is just wrong on that. It's when you get constructive receipt, you physically touch the check. And how are you going to prove it? You don't know how long when you were on vacation that check sat in your mailbox. Did it sit in the mailbox for the first day of the four-month period? Or was it delivered on the last day of the four-month period? I've talked openly about me mailing my father a Christmas gift the day after Thanksgiving, not the day after, the week after Thanksgiving, the day after is Black Friday. I think it was the Monday or Tuesday after Thanksgiving. And he did not receive it until April. And the little bugger accused me of not mailing him a Christmas gift. And then apologized when he got it in April. And notice the post stamp, they stamped the mm-hmm. posters. I don't even know what they call it anymore. Postmark was November. So you're not penalized. I swear to you folks, you're not penalized on this. But I'll continue with what Chad is saying. If a check was mailed and arrived at your home while you were away, the IRS considers that you received it once it was delivered to your address, i.e. constructive receipt. Ed has always explained to me that, or to us, not just me, constructive receipt is when you touch it. Your vacation scenario. If the IRA mailed the check and it hit your mailbox in June, your 60-day clock began in June. Chad is not explaining how that's even proven by the IRS or the post office. I can ask it, and maybe I will, not live on the air. I'll ask it later and share with you all what he says. It does not begin when you come back from vacation 4 months later. Obviously, Chat does not know about the PLR, about the guy in jail. Another guy was involuntarily committed to a rehab facility by his family because he was a drunkard. When he got out, he asked for a PLR on, hey, I never touched it. It was there, but I never touched it. IRS says, that's fine. As soon as you touch it, you can start. Chat goes on. But there are some exceptions and relief from Revenue Procedure 2016-47, which allows self-certification for late rollovers if you meet certain acceptable reasons. I was on vacation for 4 months, didn't check my mail, probably won't fly. But other examples of it being misplaced by financial institutions or you had a serious illness will apply. That serious illness one, that again was prior private letter rulings why the IRS just decided to put this in there. Because people did, not theoretically, the medical community says alcoholism is an illness. This guy, as his treatment, was involuntarily committed to a facility to get clean. And that was his treatment. That was his medical issue. And the IRS let it slide. So I do believe Chat is wrong on this. I'm going to actually share this string with the Ed Slot Group to confirm. But I have confirmed this with them in the past, and I'll confirm yet again. As we say, constructive receipt. And it's when you physically touch the check, when you physically receive it. Prior to that, there is no way of proving. Even on my four-month vacation example, when did that check get put in that mailbox? When? How could you even prove? Chad is saying randomly it was delivered in June. How do you know it was delivered in June? It could have been delivered the day before I got home from my four-month vacation. You see where I'm going with this, folks? This is a definite gray area, and there is no way, unless Congress or the IRS mandates, that mailed checks going to a person be certified mail or return receipt requested or something like that, that would prove. And it would have to go to the IRS. It would have to, hey, any check you mail, you send us proof of when this person got it. The IRS isn't going to mandate that. They could track it anyways. Chad is wrong on this, folks. I swear to you. What do you think, Chris?
I think it's wrong practically because of what you keep saying about proving it. There's no trail for anyone to claim when, you know, even if they want to claim that it hitting the mailbox is constructive receipt, even though you didn't go pick it up. Who knows during that 4 months when it actually got delivered? There's no way to prove it. It doesn't mean that the intent of the rule wasn't that the day it hits your mailbox, it's constructive receipt. It's probably more, we can't prove what day it hit the mailbox. So effectively, we can't use that as the date because it's an unidentifiable date. So I think that might be where the nuance is, that it's intended to be when it hits the mailbox, but...
And that's what we've always said on this show. And that's the way it was taught to me from the Ed Slot group. And I will confirm it again. If anybody is listening, whether it's a VG'er who geeks out on this stuff or another advisor or a CPA who disagrees, please share that with me. Not me personally. Don't write to me, hey, you jerk, you're wrong. Because I will share it with the Ed Slot group and get their opinion. And it was always explained to me through the Ed Slot group that it's impossible to prove. You can't just assume, hey, the check was mailed June 30th. I'm making that date up. The check was mailed June 30th. You're probably going to get it 4 or 5 days later. So we, the IRS, is counting the date from July 4th, which is a holiday, so we'll give you a break. We'll start July 5th. They can't just randomly assume when you got that check. Especially when I would go to tax court and ask for a jury trial because everybody has received something in the mail 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 months after it was sent, like my dad did. And you can just argue, I didn't get it. And that's the point. Maybe it violates the spirit of the law, but a fact is a fact. There is no way to prove when you touched that check. So we have always shared. If you are doing a 60-day rollover and you want as many days as possible, don't have the money sent to you electronically. Ask for a paper check. Now, that's very risky, mailing a paper check that could be for tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. But ask for a paper check. And no pun intended, don't check your mail for quite some time. Until you're ready to do the rollover, then check your mail. If you want to play by the rule. Or just keep your fingers crossed that the U.S. mail does what it often does, not all the time. So if you're a post person, don't get angry. But many times the U.S. mail loses things and is just late, as my dad's gift was. So I disagree with this. We're going to stop here for today because I don't want to cloud up chat, so to speak, this thread. I'm going to run this through the Ed Slot group and chat, no pun intended, with them about this. And when we come back, maybe on the next Q&A show, if I have this done, it's not going to be top of my priority list, folks, but hopefully I can do it in the not too distant future. Let's share what Ed Slot says again, or their group, their minions, the three consultants. I'm not going to get Ed himself. And we'll plow that into chat. And I will also share my thoughts behind it. How are they going to measure? But anyways, if you are a VG who geeks out on this, an advisor who's knowledgeable in this, a CPA who knows about this, a tax attorney, and you agree or disagree with me, share that with me. I'd love to. This is fascinating to me. I geek out on this stuff. But I disagree wholeheartedly. I understand what chat's saying, but it's not looking at it realistically. I don't think ChatGPT, and in fact, I'll probably begin with that. Hey, chat, when was the last time you actually got a letter from the U.S. Postal Service? It never did. It probably thinks the U.S. Postal Service is the most efficient thing next to ChatGPT. And the fact of the matter is, it loses things constantly. How can you hold that against someone? You can't. And it has to begin with when they physically touched the check. Whether or not they were put in rehab involuntarily, they're on a vacation, they never got the check. These are all PLRs that were ruled in favor of the taxpayer. That does not set rule. It's not a revenue ruling. but it gives precedence of how the IRS may interpret this. And if any of you are ever questioned on this, I would demand take it to tax court and ask for a jury trial. If you can, I don't know if you can in tax court ask for a jury trial, but just explain, Your Honor, or Your Honor, sometimes is the group of three judges. I never got the check. I'm sorry. I didn't get the check until the day I touched it. And yes, that was 4 months ago. The U.S. Postal Service didn't deliver the check. I just don't know how they're going to disprove that. Any thoughts, Chris?
Yeah. No, I think it's practically that's how it works, even though it might not be the spirit of what was intended. So thanks, everybody, for listening. If you've got questions you want to submit for a Q&A show, I'll remind you how to do that. Send them directly to Jim, jim@jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Include in the subject line that it's a question for the podcast and a couple of words about the topic area. We really appreciate those questions coming in so we can do those Q&A shows. This will be it for the Ed Slot quiz questions. So next week we'll have something fresh queued up for you on the EDU show. Don't know what it is quite yet. It'll be new and exciting for all of us, including myself.
And you know what, Chris?
What's that?
I don't know yet either.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I suspect it.
I probably won't decide until Tuesday afternoon. Right. We record these on a Tuesday. Yeah. Till Tuesday afternoon when we sit to record what in the heck it is we're going to chat about. Yeah. I have no idea. Yeah.
Sounds good. So you have a good day, Jim. Everybody else, stay healthy and safe. Until next time, we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.